Okay, this is Amy Kitchener with Royal Morales, and today is August 31st, 1993, and we are at the Refugee Service Center at 1720 Beverly Boulevard in Los Angeles. Roy, when were you born?
I was born in, that's quite some time ago, huh? May 28th, 1932.
And where was that?
Right here in Los Angeles. My parents were then living at some of the bungalows or the basements of the Majestic Hotel on First and Grand by Dorothy Chandler Pavilion now. That's where they used to live, where a lot of the Filipinos, first-timers, the old-timers and the first wave were living at that time during the Depression. And I think I was finally born in the California hospital here on 14th and Hope. But more my early childhood, first 2 years, would be in that area I just mentioned on First and Grand.
And who were your parents?
Parents were one of the early immigrants, or shall we say, first wave of the Filipino, who were recruited as workers as well as students from the Philippines as part of the colonization of the Philippines when the United States took over the Philippines after the Spanish-American War and then the Philippine-American War. Immediately thereafter, which would be about early 1900, but my father really came here in the 1928 as a representative at a world convention of church, which is under the Disciples of Christ Christian Church, and they invited several Filipinos, and he was one of the representatives.
And to come to visit
for the convention in Washington, D.C. And with that experience, while he was in visiting the country and coming to Los Angeles, he became close friends with some American missionaries to Congo. And that's how the next step of his life changed, because as he became friends and with this family, the family was referred to as the they referred to them as the father and the mother of the Filipinos, the Dai family, the Dr. Royal J. Dai, and that's actually where my name comes from. And the wife was Mother Eva Dai, and they're the one who sort of convinced my father to stay here, go to school, get educated, and then go back to the Philippines when he wants to. And that's what happened.
So that was the late 20s?
Late 20s, yeah.
Were many Filipinos coming as students to be educated and then return to the Philippines?
There were two sets of students. The student pensionados who were picked, recruited by the Philippine authorities and the U.S. authority government of the colony were recruited, like I said, and brought here to be educated, know the American system, the educational system, the politics, commerce, whatever, so that when they go back, they take on the leadership. So that's one type of student. Then you have the individual students who came on their own once to no more get educated in America. But my father was neither one, but he was just a delegate to an assembly, and he ended up staying to be a student.
Then
working in the farms and as domestic here and there.
What did he study when he was here?
Oh, he took sociology and ministry, because he was very close to the ministry activity in the Philippines. And he was also a part-time, I think, teacher as one of the product of the United States colonization of the Philippines. in the early 20s.
Did he return then to the Philippines or then stay?
He went to school for a while and then he brought my mother here.
Where did they locate? Was that?
And they located right over, I mentioned, First and Grand area.
And where was he
Los Angeles.
School?
Then he was going to California. I think it was called in California Christian College, now Chapman University, which is now in Orange. But CCC used to be here in L.A., right by LACC. Matter of fact, LACC bought the property there when they moved in 1954. In 1954, by the way, we were the last graduate of the Chapman College then at the Vermont campus before they went to Orange.
I see.
So he went to that school. Most of the Filipino students, and a lot of them, and that was interesting because you can see the annuals, the pictures, etc., school activities. A number of Filipinos who went there. And from there, if they went on further into education, they would end up at USC. And that's what my father did. Finished at Chapman in the early 30s, and then he ended up in USC by 33, got his degrees, and then in ministry as well as in sociology. And then by 34, then we went to the Philippines.
Oh, really?
The whole family.
Oh, to move, to stay?
Yeah. He had his time in America and then wanted to do more things for the Filipinos, and then went there and did his ministry, teaching and establishing churches and schools. And that's what he did all his life until World War II, and then that he died very early, in an early age of 55. But he accomplished, I think, what he wanted to do.
So what were the circumstances for you returning?
Well, I think the fact that I was born here was one of the key thing, influence or factors that they used to tell me that I was an American citizen, I will have to go back to America if I want to claim that citizenship, I have to go to study, and so sort of I was programmed to come back. You know, because well, when you get older, when you're ready to go, we'll find some ways for you to get back to your country, kind of a thing. And so by the age of, I went to elementary school over there. I grew up there, elementary school, while my dad was doing his preaching and teaching and establishing churches and organizing. I went to my elementary public school. And a high school locally in our area. Matter of fact, this high school that I went to is known as Eureka. Eureka High School. That was founded by my father after the World War II. And so I also graduated in there in 1950-51. And then I came to the United States in 51. Via Hawaii, yeah.
Alone?
Yeah, and I was just about 18. Wow. Because they said, well, you have to be, you know, you have to register for the draft. You're 18 years old. If you don't, and that's what the embassy told us in the Philippines, that if I didn't come back by the age of 18, I would lose the citizenship. So through my uncle in Hawaii, who was a farm worker there, one of the early old-timers who is again part of that 20-30 recruiting of workers in the plantations of Hawaii and here in the vegetables and fruit vineyards and places in the West Coast. My uncle in Hawaii sort of said, well, if you're going to come to America, I said, if you're going to go to school and make a commitment, then I will help you get your education. And so I passed by Hawaii in 1951, summer of 51, where I stayed with my uncle. Matter of fact, he wanted me to go to University of Hawaii, and I had no problems. So I tried to go to University of Hawaii, but there were so many restrictions and examinations, and I didn't pass the English test and the entrance, so I was not admitted. So my uncle said, well, I guess try the mainland. Go to the mainland, find a school there. And that was quite an experience, you know. It was really a letdown. But then he said, well, I was young, so I said, well, maybe go to America. Well, that's what my dad and mom was always saying, go to America, go to Los Angeles, go to Chapman. And so that rang a bell. And so I said, oh. So I said, well, tell my dad to write to Chapman. I wrote to Chapman. And so I wrote asking how to be admitted into Chapman. And right away I said, my father came to the school a long time ago, and right away it was very interesting because the registrar at that point was a classmate of my father, and he knew my father. So he said, that's no problem, just come on over, we'll admit you, we'll do all the tests and don't worry about it, you'll stay in the dormitory, and that was it. My uncle sent me over here, and I was then met by Father Dai at the airport, and the minister friend of my father, who also was part of the founders of now the Filipino Christian Church, Reverend Felix Pascua. He's still alive. He is now our, and they were the people who came together, who were together here, who started actually the congregation Filipino Christian Fellowship, with the sponsorship of the Dai family.
How old were you when you had left L.A. after when your family...
Two years, 3 years.
Did you have any memories at all?
Mm-mm.
What were first impressions when you returned in 1951?
Yeah. Well, I saw the big trees, the big ocean. I saw the mountains and those snow. Very impressive. Very clear, beautiful, coming through United Airlines at that time, you know, propeller, you know, seeing this vast, big country. It was very impressive. Yeah. And then going directly to the campus, that was my acculturation, is the campus, the school. And right away, the other connection was going to the Filipino Christian Church. That became my anchor.
Was that in the present Union location?
Yep.
At that point?
They were just at that time buying that place. They just bought it.
Because they were downtown.
They were mostly downtown on First and Los Angeles. Before that, I understand they were on Winston and Main Street and other places. But that was the transition from downtown LA to this place, which was their dream all the time, to someday we will have our own church.
And where was the Filipino American community centered at that time?
In the days of my father, it was basically in that area that I just mentioned. The Christian Fellowship was founded in the basement of Majestic Hotel or Motel, and that's where they were all congregating. But they also were congregating then in Weller Street. Now it's Colonel Onizuka.
By
Otani Hotel, mm-hmm. Between San Pedro and Los Angeles Street. There's a small street there. That was a big Filipino center where they had the pool halls, they had the restaurants, they had the employment agencies, they had their barbershop, tailor, and that was their little community.
As I
look and read and look at the maps, that's where they were. And so if you look at they go further, then you could say Filipino Christian Fellowship and Winston and Main Street kind of a thing.
But that wasn't there in 1950?
By 1950 it was gone. Because that continued all the way to World War II. See, but then when the Japanese American came back, that's basically was the Japan town. But part of it was where a lot of the Filipinos hang around. And so, well, around the other side of it too, and towards the south of San Pedro is the old Chinatown. So within that parameter, you have the Filipinos, the Chinese, and the Japanese, and they were sort of near to each other until there were some changes. World War II and after World War II, and then Chinatown developed, Japantown developed, Bunker Hill redevelopment took over a lot of the places where the Filipinos were, and they got moved west, or they left.
To this area now?
The next step where there are a lot of Filipino congregation or spots, places, again, restaurants, stores, barber shop, tailor, pool halls, was on Figueroa and Temple. Now it's no longer there because the health department took over and the freeway took over and all that. So then they got pushed again towards the West, and that's when the Filipino Christian Church also then bought in the 50s. That's really the development of this area here, Filipino town. And so from the Figueroa temple area concentration, move west. So now you see, becomes here Union and Temple area of past to further down to Alvarado and west, then became the 50s, 60s as the new Filipino town. The Filipino Community Center was about the same time too.
Fakwa?
Yeah, Fakwa. So if you look at the dates in when it was established, it's about the same time. Because when I first came here, it used to be housing in those areas. It was little bungalows, houses, wood frame houses. The first Fakwa over there. Matter of fact, the center used to be right close by Sunset and Figueroa. There's an empty lot over there now, just overlooking or next to the Board of Education by the entrance of the freeway on Grand. Right around that area used to be the Filipino center. We used to call it the Bunker Hill. So let's go dancing. We said, let's go to Bunker Hill. That's what we met in the 50s.
Where did you go dancing?
Bunker Hill, the Filipino Community Center.
Uh-huh.
And that's was our part of our socialization. And it's, like I mentioned, remember Figueroa and Temple? The pool halls, we hang around the pool hall, the restaurant, and the dancing hall of the Filipino Community Center.
I see. Before, when you said the Filipino Christian Church moved over here to Union, did they pretty much lead the way then? I mean, was that, what has been the role of that church in the community?
I would say it's a simultaneous thinking process of those people involved, because they saw it was a small community leadership and they all knew each other. Matter of fact, I remember in the 50s, we knew practically everybody, and we used to hang around every weekend in there. And so so the leadership, as I see it and as I relate to them, a lot of them hang around the center as well as the church. And the church was the key factor, I think, that held them together, because fellowship, their dramatic club, their debating club, their choir, the student youth activities were centered around the church before the Filipino community started to develop their own activities. And it was more of a social political thing that the center was doing, while the church was concentrating on the social, spiritual fellowship and community development. Then they sort of went on to, right, on their own.
Going back a little bit here to the college where you were, and you were saying that was sort of your introduction,
to America.
To America. What were some of the things that you remember about that?
Well, at the time, I was the only Filipino, and then met also a Hawaiian guy, and that was part of my orientation. Right away, they sort of connected me with the Hawaiian guy, and says, hey, he'll take care of you. He's around here. He's on the campus. And I sort of hang around with him. And he was sort of my tutor, mentor, protector, so to speak, until I got acclimated with the campus. So I used to talk to him, hear from him. We used to eat together, cook our own food in the campus, rice and Hawaiian, Filipino, and he would be asking. He said, I don't know how, but then I said, well, we'll find out. And learn from each other, because he was a World War II veteran, so he was older than I am. And he was the one who was showing me the places. And then the church, right away the church, on weekend I was in the church. And all the Filipino members of that church knew my father. They were his contemporaries. So they would tell me about the earlier days and when they used to take care of me and change my diapers and all those things. So it was my family. It was really my protective family. So if I wanted no rice in the campus, so I look forward to the weekend because I know I'm going to have rice in the church or chicken adobo and the other food that they prepared, Filipino, and then the stories they would tell. So that was really my, besides the campus, then I get to know mostly Anglo-Americans. There were a few blacks then. And then I think the second, third year, because I stayed there all the time. Then we have a few Filipinos, and so there was another two guys, one young lady, another young fellow. I think he's engineer. Ended up to be engineer. They became our club, my support group, plus the Hawaiian guy. And then when we got to know the other folks, ended up joining the basketball and other social activities in campus. The other thing that I remember in the campus, part of it, is working. Of course, obviously, while I was doing that, my uncle kept sending some money. At the same time, I already was I needed a job support. Then the school provided me a janitorial job. The Hawaiian guy, John, myself, were helping in the janitorial activities, gardening in the campus, and that was part of my activity, worked in the kitchen. There was a good activity in the kitchen because we can do whatever we want. So we didn't like the American food, we cooked our Filipino food or Hawaiian food. And that was part of the benefits we got working in the kitchen. so that was good. And then I think second year, I got acquainted with some of the Anglo friends there who were also in the campus, and they used to go to. They used to go to Lake Tahoe to work there. And I said, well, you want to go to Lake Tahoe this summer? You know, you're not going to school. Why don't you go with us to Lake Tahoe and work there? I said, I don't know. I said, yeah, why? Sounds like a great idea. So then that was part of my other socialization of what America is.
So you went.
So I went in the summer, and every summer from there on.
What work did you
continue? Wash dishes, dig ditches. Fix the gambling places out there. We used to work at Kalani Village, and that was good. And then socialization again, mostly with the Anglo. But then there were also a lot of workers there who were Filipinos, working in the kitchen, working as a busboy, working as a waiters, or just workers, and some students. I met some townmates and friends who were in some other state. Who would go there to make money. And that was good because we made money. We worked there like crazy. Right as soon as school is over, we headed for Lake Tahoe, worked there for 2.5 months, and then come back. We got money for the rest of the year. And that was good.
What were you studying?
I was taking sociology and philosophy,
and
with the intent of, I wasn't sure what I was going to do until I took the classes. There was a professor, Dr. B.J. Oliver, who was a sociologist, social worker, who kind of convinced me or sort of encouraged me, hey, why don't you go into social work? So I said, okay, sounds like a good idea. So I was sort of programmed to sociology, social work. And so in the fourth year, then I applied to USC School of Social Work, which for social work degree, and I was accepted. I was also accepted by Boston University, but I got scared of leaving Los Angeles, and they kept saying, oh, you got to go all the way to a very, very cold climate, snow, and you don't know the people over there, you may get lonesome. And so, since SC accepted me, I said, well, I may as well stay close to SC in the support group. And when I moved again from there, from the dormitory of S. Yeah, Chapman, I ended up in the dormitory at USC. I think until the last quarter, I think I moved. Yeah, I did move out the last quarter to a rooming house.
So what do...
Then took my master's there.
Have any special memories of school at USC?
I think, if the memories I would have would... I'm fairly well into the process of American life. Part of it was another support group I had was automatically joined through the friends knowing the Filipinas, the Philippine Trojan Club. Yeah.
There were many.
Matter of fact, Jim Neighbor was in our club. You know the comedian Jim Neighbor? He was in there. He hanged around with the Filipinos in the Philippine Trojan Club. He used to do entertaining and all that. So we were all part of that. But there was probably about 60, 75 of us. And who hanged around together, but it was basically definite, you know, educational activity. Spend most of my time, and then again on weekends I end up in the church, and that's where I also maintain my bilingualism, because when I hang around on Temple Street and the Filipino town or in the church, you know, we talk the language or the vernacular, and we continue that. And so I was able to maintain my language capacity. I could have lost it if I did not. And so Philippine Trojan Club was part of it. And the weekend when Bunker Hill Hall.
Oh, that was still there then?
It was still there. It was still there.
So what was the there?
I would say by the 60s it disappeared. But she's within the span of 51 to 56. Then after 56, I got drafted into the Army. When I finished I was always deferred. I would have been in Korean War, but I was deferred because I was going to school at Chapman and then at USC. But immediately thereafter, after graduation at USC, I went into the Army and was drafted.
So you didn't get a chance to go to work?
Not really. I worked part-time with Hathaway Home for Children, briefly. Then I got my orders to, it's time for you to go.
So where were you stationed?
So then I was sent for training at Fort Ord, Fort Luce, Sam Houston, and then finally at Fort Luce, Washington. Carson, I think I said Fort Luce. I was trained in Fort Carson, Colorado. So from a very, very wet, dumpy place of Fort Ord to a cold, cold place in Colorado, then the hot, humid place in Houston, and then to the rainy northwest of Fort Lewis, Washington, Seattle, or Tacoma.
So
that then my whole outlook of life changed again, shifted again.
It didn't. How so?
Well, because it's a different type of, life in the Army, and et cetera. But I hang around. Well, there were a few Filipinos and Asians and minorities in our outfit, so we sort of hang around together for 2 years. Year and a half, really. We were trained to be social. We were going to be trained to be military, whatever they're going to train us. And we were trained as social workers in Houston. Then they were going to put us into artillery. Then they finally ended putting us into a medical corps. So that was close. Ended up working in a mental hygiene clinic in Fort Lewis, Washington.
So when did that end?
That would be at the around 56 to 58, the end of November 58. And then from there, came back to L.A., and sought all my other friends that I knew before I went to the Army, and first work in a children's home right here in East LA, used to be called Modbooth Children's Home under the Salvation Volunteers of America. And I worked there for a while, about a year, I think, and then I was offered outreach to Neighborhood Youth Program, Neighborhood Youth Association.
Then took them. Neighborhood Youth.
Neighborhood Youth Association, United Way, working with youth gangs and kids in Venice or West LA, Wilmington. And that's where I stayed for a number of years, maybe about 59 to 70. Stayed with them as a social worker.
And then activities and projects that you do with them?
A great deal, mostly with outreach, what we call group work, working with them through groups and individuals where we would meet weekly and then special times, special days, specific times, camping, picnicking, counseling, driving them around, going to different socialization activities. We have wagons, we have cars that we use, and we call it our clubhouse on wheels. And we would pick up the kids in school. We know who they are. They would be referred by police, parents, or the schools that are having trouble. So we do the outreach and form a group out of that, and then develop and work with them for a year or two to keep them out of trouble or help them out to straighten their lives out. And that was a very, very rewarding experience in West LA, Venice, and then until I became the director for a similar project activity for the Wilmington office. Yeah. Then from there, 71, of course, 60, 70s, the riots, we got involved in the South Central activities and trying to rebuild South Central, after 65. And worked closely with some of the community-based programs through United Way and participated in the organizing development of program for South Central job development. We did that as part of our activity until the 70s when the ethnic minority came together and services programs, mental health, especially in mental health, funding for training of students, Asian Pacific Islanders, targeting that group, that came out of the experience of the Chicano, La Raza group, and so we followed
their... Politicized at this point?
Yeah, very politicized activity, bilingualism, biculturalism, ethnic identity, power to the people, so to speak,
What were some of the... important organizations and then we started activities at that time?
That time, then, there were really no real activities except for the black-white stuff, issues that were coming out. Then pretty soon the other ethnic comes, and then the development of the Oriental Service Center, the development of the Asian American Education Commission, got involved in that. The development of the creation of the council, it used to be called KU, Council of Oriental Organization, that was sifted into Council of Asian Pacific, KAPU organization. We got involved in that, plus then at that time the creation, or shall we say, coming of the Filipino Americans, the definition of to pee or not to pee, should it be F or not, and so the activism of the time.
That was a very big
the
issue.
60s, 70s, yeah. And some say, well, we're Filipino now, so the shift into the use of the P for the activists and the into the movement, and it relates to the ethnic identity, the ethnic consciousness, civil rights movement, and being able to define our own terms. A lot of meetings through the Far West. It's interesting because part of the big umbrella that was developing then was the Filipino Far West Convention, and all those things bringing the Filipinos and from different parts of the activists, the students, community folks, Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Diego, And the definition is, and it was resolved in such a way that, okay, those who want to use the P, stay with the P. Those who want to be with the F, fine, you know. You want to be traditionalist, use the F. You want to be the activist, radical, use the P. So some of us ended up with the P, Filipino-American, because of the consciousness.
Is that what you use?
Yeah. So pretty much for some of us, we utilize that. And the ethnic studies picked that up. So that when you look or relate to the ethnic studies in the West Coast especially, and even the East now, they're picking up, they use the P. Yeah, and the writings were, they have an explanation saying, well, this is the involvement of it. And the reason we utilize that is part of the, again, the identification with ethnic activities and the consciousness, just like the we use the phrase from the Negro to the Black. Okay, that was part of it. Black is beautiful. You know? Then the from the Mexican to Chicano. You know, Chicano, I'm proud. Yeah, so it was politicized part of that. And then from the Oriental to the Asian, say. Oriental is for the rug, Asian is for the people. And then the Filipino comes along, hey, man, we are Filipino. And give their own rational, we're no longer Filipino, that's from the colonials. So we are Filipino-Americans. And that's the phrase that we usually follow in terms of the rationalization, the time element and the development. And it's probably going to change. Yeah, maybe they will switch to something else, but it's going back and forth, so it's no problem.
Why would it'd
be interesting, you know, if the new generation, you know, new activist comes along, we want to be named something else.
what would the word in Tagalog, would there be a pre-colonial word for what we call ourselves?
Well, they might end up calling some, they use the word like Maharlika.
You know, that would be challenging.
Yeah, we are Maharlika, or they might say we are the Lapu Lapu. You know, those are old historical meaning. You know, and so we say, well, we're the Barangay. So there's possibilities there, but it's going to be interesting how it's going to play out. So you still have the debate, and people will say, hey, why are you using that? And then we give them the rational. But then the use of the P and the F in the Philippines is go back and forth into all kinds of cycle anyway.
What were other issues that were particular to Filipino-Americans at this time?
In the 70s, well, the ethnic studies and then empowerment, getting into certain positions of importance, getting further into to the roots, heritage, a lot of the games, culture, kite making, sipa, parol making, poetries that are in combination of Filipino as well as English were developing, the artists, writers were coming out, and few books were beginning to be written, curriculum, syllabus were being developed that has
roots. And this was really the first time that this was starting to happen?
That's right. You read books, histories, articles, hardly anything about Filipino. You know, and what is stated in the history books are incorrect anyway. It's from whoever the writers, historians of the time. So a lot of this, well, let's write about ourselves. This drama, poetry, essay, articles, arts and crafts were all part of the seeking the roots and you know, putting out what they could do. And a lot of these, the books coming from the Philippines. I remember whenever I went to the Philippines, I emptied my suitcase, but I come back with books and articles, stories of the old and the dictionaries and poetries and arts and crafts from the Philippines. Now, why are we doing all this? It's all part of that, you know, trying to bring the roots from there to here so that we find some kind of reality and relevancy of what we were, you know, because we were miseducated and colonized, and we lost a lot of our roots, traditions, history. And so we were into a lot of history. A lot of the discussions, debates were, let's go back to the roots, so to speak, you know. And there must be the value system, the religion, the cultural traditions, the beliefs, even the myths and the legends were all part of the thing that we were all talking about, sharing with each other. The songs and the gestures were all part of that identity that was really developing, which is in line with what's happening with the Chicanos, the blacks, and all that. The books, the curriculum was very important. As I mentioned about the commission, Asian American Education Commission, and the conferences we used to have on Asian Americans. It was all related to that, and some of us Filipinos were relating to the whole experience.
So you had coalitions, and then you had
program development.
Filipino American groups. But one thing I'm interested in is, like, what were some of the similarities with the other Asian American groups, but what were the differences that were unique to Filipino Americans?
Mm-hmm. I think this similarities relates to the experiences. The way, you know, the early pioneers, or the first wave, why did they come here to begin with? You know, it's related to be the workers. It relates to the indentured servitude that comes back from earlier times. And they were brought in as workers. We usually try to refer to the old timers as the brown power. The muscle power that was brought in to rebuild the plantations, or continue the plantations. Of Hawaii, or here, the vegetable and the farm enriching the farms, and that's true as part of the Chicano or the Bracero program. Okay, so they were all part of that. And then you also have those who are wanting to be getting more educated, who stayed. So you have that part of the experience. The racism, the loss, the anti-Asians. The Filipinos went through with the Japanese, Chinese in a different way. They went through all that, and Carey McWilliams will write about those things. John Steinbeck, Carlos Bulusan, America is in the Heart, Manuel Buakin will write about those things as part of the what they went through in terms of the anti-Filipino. But then, there are some similarities in terms of the experience and racism and sexism. And they were the male were the only one brought here. And with the anti-miscegenation laws, the Filipino male was really an endangered species, at that point in time.
Was that a factor when you came here in the 50s?
I think it's probably less, but it was still there. That you would be told, you would be said, very few again. That's why I said you can count your fingers, everybody knows who's going out with who. And they said, well, don't marry anybody else but Filipino. You would hear from the old timers, you should not be dating outside of your family, outside of your group, because, hey, we went through all this and you don't want to be hurt, disappointed, so you kind of worry about, wonder about it, but then that's what they were saying, and then you run into some of the Filipinos who are, or Filipinas who are mestizas or mestizos, and you hear that, we did not really get married here. We got married someplace else because we were not allowed to marry white. I got married, my father-in-law, the Tennessee, got married in Tijuana because that's the only place they would allow them to marry. And I said, okay, so you have that. But besides those other experiences, the different experience some of the Filipinos went through would be, the difference would be, one, because of the Americanization, Americanization, colonization of the Philippines, there's a separate relationship, but it's quite, what's a little brown, or the McWilliams would say the little brown brothers, kind of a relationship. And then the English, because English became the medium of expression, communication. So there's a little bit of that, so that there's a little closer affinity or relationship between the Filipino and the American, so to speak. And then the colonization process, the development of the Philippines as the democratic showcase of Asia, of America, kind of thing. So they take on those images, different kinds of images. There's some pros and cons to that, and I look at it in, as a historian, and try to analyze some of that. Maybe that's part of the real problem, that we have too many, we've been invaded, colonized by so many countries that created the colonial mentality and the lack of real closeness to the roots, because everything was sort of taken away. The religion, the politics, the values were shifted. 350 years of Hispanic colonialism, then you have over 75 years of Americans, and then you have 4 years of English invasion, and 4 years of Japanese invasion changes, and then you have the American-Korean War, and all this different thing, changes, confusion, or sifting of things. I'm pretty sure it affected the Filipino mentality. And up to this point, we're very confused.
So it had to be a very self-conscious movement then to take back that heritage and
that's right.
those traditions, and to teach them to the children.
And, mm-hmm. and so that's part of the thing that we were picked up on in those days. And it's being carried, and today it's the same thing. The student would answer, how come I don't know this thing? How come you guys didn't? So now you begin to see that the young Filipinos are beginning to pick up on what we were saying back in the 70s, which was kind of quiet down in the 80s. The 90s, I feel a sense of the Filipino